Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We may have a very short NBA Finals. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you on the afternoon drive. Game one of the NBA Finals last night. I love game ones. Game twos and closeout games. Those are typically my favorite games in the NBA Finals because game one, you have all the buildup. There's just something about the NBA Finals. We talked about this yesterday. A lot of excitement, especially this year. We have two teams going at it that it would have been tough to predict this. Not only at the beginning of the year, but also the beginning of the playoffs. I don't know that too many predicted Milwaukee and Phoenix. Game two, we'll have an opportunity to look at some of the changes, some of the adjustments made. I think these are two really well-coached squads. And then, closeout games. How do teams react when the trophy, the end is there? It's such a marathon season. So those are always my three favorite aspects of the NBA Finals. Last night, Game 1 leads me to believe that if all things stay equal, we may, in fact, have a very short Finals because Phoenix did not play well last night. That was not the best of the Phoenix Suns. And they won this game pretty easily. I mean, if you watch their obvious mismatches that Phoenix continued to take advantage of time and time again in this game last night. The switch at the top of the key, mid-range, it favored Phoenix all night long. It didn't matter if it was Brook Lopez guarding Chris Paul or Bobby Portis or PJ Tucker. It did not matter. Chris Paul was incredible once again last night. And Devin Booker, he was pretty good as well. Not as efficient from the field as we have seen over the last little while, but he did enough. I think he was just 1 of 8 from the three-point line. Oh, they still won by 13, with Devin Booker shooting 1 of 8 from deep. If you're Milwaukee, the storyline yesterday was, how would this team look without Giannis? Giannis plays, which it was amazing to me that he did play, because at the beginning of the day, he was doubtful, then he was upgraded to questionable, then we saw him at shoot-around, and then it was, yes, he's going to play. And I thought, how efficient or how good will Giannis be? How healthy is he? He looked pretty good in the first quarter. Does he look like the two-time MVP? No, he's not 100%. I get that. But I think this is the best Giannis that we get. Made a couple of jaw-dropping plays defensively. Wasn't nearly as active on the offensive side of the court. I think he only took 11 shots. Is that right? Yeah, 6 of 11. That's what he shot last night. Did have 17 boards, so he was active on the glass. But he's not 100%. And that's something that is going to be reoccurring throughout this series. Milwaukee actually hit 16 three-point shots in this game last night. And at no point in time was it ever in doubt, especially in the second half. Phoenix runs this lead up to 20. I think Milwaukee got back within 7. But at no point in time did I ever think that Phoenix was in trouble. And Jay Crowder was not good last night. He finished 0 of 5 from deep, 0 of 8 from the field. I mentioned Devin Booker going 1 of 8 from the three-point line. It just was not the typical Phoenix Sun game that we have seen in this postseason, yet they still won. I thought Chris Middleton was fine for Milwaukee last night, 12 of 26. He's played some great basketball throughout the postseason. I just look at this series and think, uh-oh. If I'm a Bucks fan, uh-oh. And I almost view Game 2 as a must-win because the way Phoenix is playing right now, all the momentum of the world, Chris Paul is as healthy as he is going to be, and there's no answer for him. There's no answer for Paul. Anytime there was a switch defensively, Paul was coming off of holiday and he was getting on Tucker or he was getting on Lopez or Portis, who was in there to rough him up for 15 minutes last night. It just didn't matter. And DeAndre Ayton continues to just wow us. First NBA Finals game last night, nearly went 20-20. 22 points, 19 rebounds. Had that 20th board ripped away in the final seconds from a teammate. So as I watch this, I just see a big talent discrepancy. The only thing you could complain about if you were a Milwaukee fan was the lack of foul shots that the Bucks got throughout the first 35 minutes or so of that game. Still, Milwaukee ends up, I believe they shot 16 free throws in this game last night. Phoenix shot 26. It was more of a landslide in the middle, the chunk of the game. I just don't think it's going to matter. I think it was blatantly obvious last night. If you go back and think about the finals over the last, 20 years, think about it. You've pretty much been able to tell the way a series is going to go from games one and two. One of the exceptions I can think of, remember when Dallas went up 2-0 over Dwayne Wade and Shaq's Heat? And you thought, wow, this is the year for Dirk. I mean, the Mavericks had their way in games one and two, and it looked like that series was over, and then Miami won the next four. Maybe LeBron's Cavs, when they topped Golden State in seven. You know, it was 3-1 Golden State before Draymond Green was suspended. Those are really the only two instances that I can think of where I go back and say, yeah, that was a surprise the way that ended. Typically, you can pinpoint it. You know, even when Toronto beat Golden State wasn't healthy. I don't believe that outcome was a surprise to anyone. From what I saw last night, it just leads to me to believe that things are really going to have to go haywire for Phoenix in order for Milwaukee to win four times over the next six games. I just don't see it happening. We'll talk more NBA basketball a little bit later on in the show. Was not all good for Phoenix last night. Dario Saric is out for the remainder of the season. He left this game in the first half, and now it is official he has suffered a torn ACL. Not a huge deal for Phoenix. I mean, you feel bad for him, no doubt. But as far as his minutes moving through the postseason, this is a depth piece for the Suns. It's just another injury that you have to chalk up in the NBA playoffs where you sit and you shake your head. But I don't believe it's going to affect the outcome. Bad news, however, for Phoenix, that a depth piece will no longer be around over the final six or so games, four or so games, three or so games, however many it may be. Again, I just don't think it's going to be a very long NBA Finals. More NBA talk a little bit later on in the show. Here's what else we have on tap. We are going to talk a lot of Major League Baseball as we are counting down the days to the All-Star break. Once you get to that point, you're going to see a lot of teams being buyers and sellers. And there's talk today that the Chicago Cubs, who have struggled mightily over the last little while, may in fact be sellers at the deadline. I've said it a million times this year. One of the most interesting teams to me, based on the talent that they have, knowing that a lot of this talent may not be back next season. I don't believe the Cubs have won since they threw a combined no-hitter against the Dodgers. They've dropped 11 straight. And in the Central, it's a division that is so tightly compacted all the way from front to back, starting to spread a little bit. The Cubs were battling with the Brewers over the last 10 games. There's been separation. Milwaukee's now opened up a six-game lead in that division over the Reds. The Cubs are now 8.5 back. And I don't know if the Cubs planned on being this competitive throughout the majority of the first half of the season when they dealt Yu Darvish, but they appear to be an obvious seller. You look at some teams that could be buyers. Surprise teams. What about the Angels? The Angels are now over 500. They have the most exciting player in baseball, and Shohei Ohtani. He is the most entertaining player in baseball right now. The guy is a unicorn. I've never seen anyone do what Ohtani can do. At the plate, in the field, on the pitcher's mound, this guy can literally do it all. They may be buyers. That would have been a surprise at the beginning of the year. What about the NL East? Phillies, Braves, Nationals, who's going to be buyers and sellers? We'll talk about the storylines circulating throughout Major League Baseball. We do have plenty of day games. In fact, a lot going on right now as we speak. The Reds lead the Royals 4-2, this one in the ninth inning. Right now, Jesse Winker is at the plate with one runner on. The Reds looking to continue to play good baseball right now. The Reds have been up and down all season long. They're inching towards another victory. Right now, the Angels lead the Red Sox. This one is in the, I'm trying to read that, if it's the bottom of the sixth, it looks like. 4-3. Angels right now over the Red Sox in the bottom of the sixth inning. Finals from earlier today, the Rays top the Indians 8-1. That one is a final in seven innings. The Braves defeat the Pirates 14-3. This was a battle early on, but Atlanta goes on a 12-0 run to close out this game. White Sox over the Twins 6-1. Tigers top the Rangers 5-3. And then the Mets get the best of the Brewers 4-3. Jacob DeGrom's ERA rises above 1. Heaven forbid, this guy's been that dominant. Here we are hitting that 90-game mark. And finally, his ERA is above 1. Another final in seven innings. It was the second game of the doubleheader, the Rays topping the Indians 4-0. Plenty more baseball coming up tonight. It will continue in the 5 o'clock hour with the Dodgers and the Marlins. I don't know if you saw the way this game ended last night. It was insanity that a Major League Baseball game would end like this. It was almost like watching Little League, the mistake. Two outs, bottom of the 10th, Starling Marte is on second base. And a wild pitch from the Dodgers, Marte goes to third. Now, mind you, there's two outs. Dodger catcher Will Smith picks up the ball, fires it over to third base. Why, I don't know. It gets past Justin Turner. Marte walks in for the game-winning run. That's Little League Baseball. I couldn't believe that's the way a 10-inning game came to an end last night. Speaking of Little League Baseball, we will have more on that coming up in just a bit because we have the Pacific Southwest Regional Tournament moving into the Castle Country for 2 weeks. Three different age groups will be playing here. In fact, we're going to talk about that when we return here on Drive Time Sports. We'll also talk to Bill Lasky at our Major League Baseball conversation every Wednesday. That's what's straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports.
If you're interested in finishing your degree or continuing your education, Utah State
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Got a lot of baseball talk to get to here on the show today. We're going to start on the local level. Next week, we have a Little League Baseball, the Pacific Southwest Regional Tournament, making their return here to the Castle Country. It's essentially 2 weeks of Little League Baseball right here. And joining us to talk a bit about that, we have Jill Emerson, who is the tournament director and also the Southern Utah Commissioner. Jill, as always, great to get you in.
Thank you.
You and I were talking a minute ago, and as you pointed out, boy, it's going to be extremely busy. July 18th throughout the remainder of the month, there's Little League Baseball here in the local area.
Correct. We have some awesome games planned out, so make sure and stop by and check out the Pacific Southwest Regional Tournament that we'll have going on.
Three age groups coming this year, 9, 10, and 14-year-olds. So obviously, you guys have done something right in years past because it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. This is the third or fourth time, right, that you guys have been able to host this tournament. So what has worked that keeps this coming back here to the area and bringing all these people in?
So, correct, this is our fourth time. Last year, due to COVID, we did have two age groups, and no one was able to go to a regional tournament or World Series. So this year, we were set to have just two age groups of 10s and 14s, and due to COVID, California could not let many people in. So with that being opened, I was sent a request, and luckily we have great parents and a great committee to take this all on, and they entrust us to put on a great event. So I think that's the whole reason we have three this year. It will be two age groups, 9 and 10s, the first week, so July 18th through the 24th. And then that next following week, July 25th through the 30th, will be our 14-year-olds. So not sure what we're doing great, not great, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it keeps happening. It keeps coming back. And as far as the teams joining us, California, Hawaii, Nevada, Arizona, and then, of course, we'll have some Utah teams as well.
Correct. So I'm excited. We had state last week over in Emory, and there were some great games. We went to probably three what-if games to see who would qualify to go on to regionals. One point I do want to bring out at state, with Price, let alone, we have 9-year-olds going to regionals. We have 10-year-olds going to regionals. We have 11-year-olds going to regionals, and we have 12-year-olds going to regionals, and 14. So Price is known for baseball, and it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Every year, there's a large group of kids that are traveling on somewhere, and it's always great when they're here for us. I know for the kids, they want to travel out of the area, right? But for us, it's good when we get to watch them here. We'll have that opportunity, of course, with the 9, 10, and 14-year-old host teams.
Correct.
You also mentioned that Emory had qualified as well in that 9 and 10-year-old division. So there's going to be a lot of local kids participating. And I think the intrigue alone of seeing our local kids go up against teams from Hawaii, Nevada, Arizona, California, that itself is very entertaining.
You know, the experience is what I say is so worth it. Yeah, some of those teams are amazing, but just the fact that we're there, we get to participate, and, you know, that's the whole reason I think I keep doing this.
Well, let's talk about the venues that are going to be used. We'll start with the 9-year-olds. You had mentioned that they're going to be playing in Helper. It will be different than the 10-year-olds.
Correct. So Helper Borla Field will be the place where our 9-year-olds will be playing, and I am super, super excited to have them in that cute town. And Scott Grundy and Joy, they've made sure to make that field amazing. So if I could I would have all the games there, but we need a few extra fields. So yes, nine-year-olds are at Helper Borla Field.
And then if we jump ahead to July 25th, the 14-year-olds, they're going to be playing at the high school fields, which look amazing. And it's not a surprise that those fields look amazing with who takes care of them. But on top of everything else, to have two fields right next to each other, it's become a great complex. It's become very useful.
Correct. When the high school did have some of the state playoff games, I was there to witness those baseball games, and I was excited. I'm excited when I go see wonderful fields, wonderful baseball games. So I'm excited to show the different states what we do have here locally and show off like how well we do take care of our fields.
Okay, so the 10-year-olds, they'll be playing at the Price Toy Outwood fields.
Correct.
9-year-olds will be playing at the Helper Borla fields.
Correct.
And then 14-year-olds are going to be playing at the high school.
Yes.
Okay, now we've mentioned the dates, but we also have to talk about the opening ceremonies and the skills event challenges, because there's so much more than just the games itself.
Correct. So on Sunday, July 18th, out at the Fairground Softball Complex, we will have our 9 and 10-year-olds skills events challenge, probably starting between 7:30 p.m. and 8 o'clock. We will have the home run derby, and we will have around the horn and probably some base running, just to get the kids to know each other, get ready for baseball that will start that Monday. Then the following Sunday, July 25th, we will have our skills events challenge at the Helper Legion field at 8 o'clock under the lights, and do the home run derby and a few other events. So I'm excited for that, and the teams look forward to that competition challenge.
Again, our guest right now is Jill Emerson. She's the tournament director for the Pacific Southwest Regional Tournament, and also the Southern Commissioner when we talk Little League Baseball. Jill, on everything else that we're discussing here, I'm sure that COVID last year really affected leagues nationwide. I mean, obviously, and because of that, you guys have had to change some things up this year as far as charging for games.
Correct. So a lot of budgets were cut. People did not make money last year due to no playing. So we do have to charge a $5 entry fee to each game, or a $20 weekly fee. We do have bracelets that we'll be giving out, or hand stamp, but just know what, in the years past, yes, I have not had to do that, and I want as many people to come out and watch games, but with budget, we do have to pay $3,000 per age group just to get here in Price, let alone. So we have had several sponsorships come through, and we are so thankful for them, but on top of everything else, to meet our budget, we do have to charge this year.
You guys have worked with tourism, I know, in the past, and you're doing that again this year. You told me you guys expect well over 1,000 people for this first group to come into town. We're talking about the 9 and 10-year-olds alone.
Correct. So there are 10 teams each age group, so we figure 20 teams with their families coming in as well, and they do have to stay that whole week, because Monday through Friday for 9 and 10-year-olds is pool play. So they are here for those 5 days, and then Saturday will be the championship semi and then the championship game. So yes, I do plan on over 1,000 people here that whole week. We are forming up with the tourism to try and let businesses know, hey, we have this many people coming in, so please try and be ready. Make sure you have servers, enough food, enough, I guess, whatever you may need for your business. We are willing to help any way possible, and I know the tourism ladies are as well, so please reach out to us any way possible. We are trying to get a way that we see how many people are coming into restaurants, either by scanning a QR code or how much money you're spending, just so that we know eventually years to come that this is a great event to keep coming back into our community.
It seems like it's going to. It seems like it's now kind of a tradition. And one other thing that we have to mention here, when talking about the 10 and 14-year-olds, the winners, they move on to the World Series.
Correct. So 10s and 14s and 12-year-olds are the only age groups that go on and right to the World Series. And we have two of them that are here in our town. So some great baseball games I know that are going to happen because those teams want to make it to the World Series. We'll have ETV News doing live streaming on just those age groups alone, only the 10s and the 14s. So if you can't make it out to a game, it will be on the live stream, their website. There is a charge on there, but I know it's very minimal.
Well, Jill, I think we have covered everything. I know it's going to be a lot of fun, a very busy time for you, July 18th through July 30th. So the 9 and 10-year-olds from the 18th to the 24th, and then we'll move right into the 14-year-olds, and that's a lot of baseball.
And I'm so excited.
Well, I always appreciate you stopping by to talk about what's happening as far as the Pacific Southwest Regional Tournaments. Jill, it's always a pleasure. Thank you again.
I appreciate you.
Let's break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll move over to the national side of things. We'll talk Major League Baseball. Former big league pitcher Bill Lasky will join us right after this.
Shohei, high fly ball to the corner. It goes into deep right field. Ohtani, he did it!
Swinging a high fly ball to right. It is out of here! Yastrzemski does it again, and the Giants lead 4-0.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAM, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
We'll flip over to Major League Baseball. A lot of day games going on today. I love middle-of-the-week day baseball games. Gives us something to talk about. Even though the hoopla right now is surrounding the NBA Finals, which it's kind of out of the norm to have this in early July. It's typically baseball season. As we continue to move forward, though, we are approaching the All-Star break. A lot of fun storylines in the big leagues, and we'll talk about that more right now with Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, now with KNBR, pre- and post-game shows for the San Francisco Giants. He's joining us over the phone right now. Bill, as always, pleasure to get you back on. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure talking baseball once again as we get down to the All-Star break and see who's going to start getting trades going, who's the traders, who's the buyers, who's the sellers. And as of this morning, it looks like the Cubs are talking about trading. And the first name that came to mind was Craig Kimbrel, as well as a couple other big flash names. So we get to talk about that today.
Yeah, buyers and sellers at this time of the season, you pretty much know. Right, you know if you're a contender or not. Here we are approaching that 100-game mark. And so you know at this point in time. But, Bill, you bring up the Chicago Cubs. And it's so crazy to me that this team would consider selling, knowing that if they had not gotten rid of Yu Darvish at the beginning of the year, this team could be right there with the Milwaukee Brewers in the Central. Now, they've lost 11 in a row. They have not won a game since they threw a combined no-hitter against the Dodgers. Just, 2 weeks ago, or however long ago it was. Now you've lost 11 straight, you're two games under 500, and I've said multiple times this year, this is the most interesting team to me in the league, because they have pieces, they have talent. This is not an Arizona Diamondback situation. It's not a Pittsburgh Pirates situation. When you look at the Chicago Cubs, they have viable options all over the field. They have viable options within their bullpen. It's one of the top bullpens in the National League. This is going to be a story that is worth following over the next couple of weeks.
No doubt about it. You know, watching some of the trade rumors this morning, the Cubs, I guess, released that Kimbrel is a possibility of being one of the first ones out the door. And the first two teams that were mentioned were the San Francisco Giants and the Toronto Blue Jays. Both bullpens that need a closer right now. Of course, Brian Baez, a couple other names were thrown out there. I think Baez is probably going to be another one that people are going to sought after. Even though he is a free agent, you know, you get a rental shortstop like him. He's got 20 home runs already. That's a pretty good, significant middle-of-the-order kind of guy, plus good defense at shortstop. Bryant's another name that the Giants were talking about because they need a right-hand power hitter in the outfield, as well as they could fill in if Longoria is not going to come back. I think the Giants, as well as Toronto, are going to be two teams that are really going to jump in to picking up a couple key pieces.
Other teams in the National League that I believe could be buyers would be the Nationals and the Phillies. And maybe you could throw Atlanta into that category as well, because when you look at the NL East, that's a division that's wide open. I know the Brewers have kind of developed a little bit of a gap between them and second place, Cincinnati, St. Louis. But when you look at the National League East, one move, one significant move like a Chris Bryant or a Javi Baez or maybe some bullpen help can change the complexion of the NL East completely.
Yeah, there was a few of those names on there. The Mets, we're talking about Berrios from Minnesota. You know, you start hearing all these names that could be placed on some of these contending teams, and yeah, you're like, hey, if that could work, it would definitely help them. But again, what do you have to give up for them? You're not going to give up many prospects because a lot of these teams now are holding on to their prize prospects because that's their future. Before, you saw teams giving up three, four guys to get a couple pieces, but I don't think that's the way anymore because of so many injuries. The IL was just, you know, the first half, it would seem like every team had four or five guys on the IL. I think that's where the depth of all the organizations fall is the prospects. And I just don't think you're going to see major prospects going in any kind of deal. And I think what you're going to get is some subpar guys and maybe a big leaguer that could fill in, you know, holes or a utility guy that could fit in just like what Farhan's done here, with guys that can play the infield as well as the outfield.
I think when we talk pitchers, another team we have to be aware of now as far as the trade deadline is concerned would be the Dodgers. Because, Bill, over the last 48 hours, there's been some interesting developments in L.A. Trevor Bauer's merchandise has been pulled from online and in-stadium team shops. And the Dodgers also canceled his bobblehead night, which was scheduled for August. Now, they're already down Dustin May, and we know that this is a franchise that will go all in. I'm starting to wonder if we have seen Trevor Bauer pitch his last game in a Dodger uniform. And if that, in fact, is the case, I have to believe this team would be buyers because, well, that starting rotation that we have drooled over for the last 3 or 4 months, it's a little decimated now.
It sure is, and you're seeing David Price throw a little bit more. He's getting links. He could have possibility fit in there. But I just wonder if you're not going to see Bauer in a Dodger uniform the rest of the year. I just think a lot of things have to occur for him to do that, and I think the Dodgers are going to follow MLB and the commissioner and see what happens in this investigation. Just like what you said, I read the same thing about all the merchandise, and I just think they're going to put him on the side. They have to pay him. He's going to get his $40 million, but what next? What team is going to take him next if the Dodgers do just flat-out release him and not deal with all the social media and all the ramifications of what's attempting to do against him? And you just don't know. And in these scenarios, the L.A. Dodgers are fighting the Giants as well as the Padres for first place. They've lost two in Miami, and both games were subpar games by Miami, or by the Dodgers losing to Miami. And it's going to be, I believe, the Dodgers are going to go out and get one or two pieces for that rotation. You have to. You got to protect what you have going on. And with Bauer and the big question mark on it, you can't hold off and just have bullpen games all the time.
Let's jump over to the American League, Bill, and we'll talk about another team that you're well familiar with, the Oakland A's. This was a team that, again, at the beginning of the year, I picked them to come out of the AL. I thought they were the cream of the crop. But over the last 10 games, they're struggling a little bit now. They have lost 7 out of 10. The Astros have developed a little bit of cushion at the top of the AL West. You have teams like the White Sox and the Red Sox and Tampa that are playing great baseball. Yet Oakland, this is a team that should probably be a buyer, but how big of a buyer come trade deadline?
Well, one of the names they're talking about is Trevor Story from Colorado. They said that they were really interested in him. And, you know, some of the factors on him, he'll be a free agent. But they're talking about picking up another starter, another reliever. I think they're going to be buyers. They always end up picking one or two pieces up. But absolutely right. I think the Astros are just trying to play their best baseball right now. Of course, yesterday, the A's jump out with three runs in the first. And sure enough, here comes the Astros. They end up winning a game 9-6 and just a slugfest. But you got to look at what Dusty Baker's done over there. He's really changed a couple pieces, put different rotation in there a little bit, and he's also changed the lineup a couple times. And some of the players are just coming to fashion there, and they're having great seasons. You got to watch out for this Astro team. They are winning, and when they start winning, you might just take over that AL West pretty quick.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball, some of the storylines circulating as we approach the All-Star break. Bill, I'm going to ask you a personal question here. AL-NL. Would you rather pay to watch Shohei Ohtani or Fernando Tatis Jr.? Who's the bigger attraction in your mind?
Well, you know, it all depends. And if you're, you know, looking at the Padres as a team, because Tatis Jr. is definitely leading the way with the Padres, but the Padres have come into a struggle. And you look at the Angels, and really, Ohtani's the guy everybody goes and watches. When he pitched pretty good yesterday, as well as the swing path he's got. He's just knocking a ball out of the yard. It's going to be really fun watching him in the home run derby. But again, you know, you got to look at what you want. You want to watch Ohtani? I would love to watch this guy take three or four at-bats every game. If you want to at least watch Tatis, Tatis is just playing some good defense finally. A leaping grab in yesterday's game, just really reached as high as he could. And again, he's just a threat every at-bat because he can go long ball, get a base hit. He's doing what he needs to be in that superstar role.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last night, and basically the conclusion I came to, and it's no knock against Tatis, Ohtani's a unicorn. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen a guy who would make the All-Star team as a pitcher and as a position player, as a DH. I've never seen this. For the first time, we actually saw an AL team use their DH slot for their pitcher against a National League team. We've never seen that. So, Bill, it's no knock against Tatis. And I know you and I have talked about Ohtani over the last little while here on the show, but again, I can't stress this enough. I've never seen anything like this guy. And the excitement, I think, is starting to circulate through the clubhouse. The Angels are now a game above 500. They're typically a 500 or sub-500 team with Mike Trout leading the way. And I'm not saying Ohtani's better than Trout, but I'm just saying the excitement that this guy is generating, I think it's lingering now throughout the clubhouse.
No doubt about it, and he's healthy. And we see how good of a pitcher he is, throwing 98 and 100 miles an hour. And it was against the Giants when he did that, where they took the DH, he pitched and hit. It was fascinating. First time you ever saw a game where the National League team had a DH and the American League team didn't. It was different, totally, and I think you're going to see a little bit more of that. But, you know, are the Angels going to buy? Are they thinking they could jump back in this? Because Mike Trout's going to be available after the All-Star break, and that whole lineup's going to get better, and it's going to be depth. I just don't know how the AL West is going to, you know, try to catch the Astros. I think the A's have a possibility of doing it. But other than that, I mean, what are the Angels going to do? Are they going to load up, try to get people, or are they going to sell a few spots and try to go younger?
You would hope that at this point the Angels would go all in, right? I mean, they've done it in free agency. Now do it midseason. I mean, that's a nice change of pace for this organization if they were to do that.
Yeah, I just wonder, I mean, Ohtani's just going to be the highlight of the All-Star game, no doubt about it, from, like I said, the home run derby and then playing in the All-Star game. He's got that superstar image. He's got the good looks, the lean body. He's so fast when he runs. Every tool that you can check off, he fills, especially being healthy. And it was fun watching him in New York when he played the Yankees. First time up, goes deep. And the fans there were loving him, even the New York Yankee fans. So there's no doubt he is becoming that superstar that Major League Baseball needs. They need more flash guys like that to bring more fans into the appeal of watching baseball. That was the number one thing when Rob Manfred took this job over, and I think it's gone the opposite way. But bringing Tatis Jr., bringing Ohtani in, the fans are definitely coming to the park to watch these guys.
Yeah, and I don't know if the two situations are similar or not, but if you look at the NBA today, it's a global game, and it started back in 1992 with the Dream Team when they were able to go to Barcelona in the Olympics. Everyone knows that story. So is this the first step in making baseball, Major League Baseball, the international phenomenon that is the NBA right now? I mean, I don't know if the two situations are similar, Bill. I know there's a lot of attention on Major League Baseball outside of the country, but it's not quite to the level of the NBA. Is this a step in that direction?
I would believe so. I think they're really trying to get the younger fans into the game to watch some of these superstars. And with the emotion they show, with the excitement they bring, you're looking at California, San Diego, and Anaheim, you know, Southern California. They need more across the United States. You can't just circle California and watch these superstars. You've got to get something else going in Colorado, in the Midwest, on the East Coast. They need to bring more attention to players to get them out to see so fans can watch them. And I think that's gone backwards. You and I always talk about the black eye that baseball has been getting, and they're getting more and more of it. Bringing these all-star uniforms, I just think that's the wrong way to do it. You want to see the uniform these all-stars wear, that they wear all year. That's the whole key about the all-star game. When you see them line up on the first and third base side, you want to see your hometown uniform. You want to see your hometown guys. And see the other guys from other teams. When they go out there in those creamsicle uniforms, you're not going to know the guys. You're not going to know their face. Sure, you might pick them out, but there's going to be a ton of first-year All-Stars on this All-Star roster, and I think they went backwards on that.
Yeah, I agree with you on the uniform thing. And I go back to being a kid. I mean, when you're growing up and you're playing out in your sandlot field or your park or wherever you're playing with the neighborhood kids, there's 10 or 12 of you out there playing. Typically, there's 10 or 12 different teams, right? Not every kid roots for the same team. That's always the vibe I got from the All-Star game, and I think they've done away with that.
And you know what else is, you know, when I was a kid and you were a kid, I didn't want to miss the introductions. That was the whole thing about the All-Star game that I wanted to see. When they lined up on the first and third base side, when they got introduced, they tipped their hat. But that was one of the biggest things I wanted to see at the All-Star game. I wanted to see the player lining up with different people from the National League and American League, watching the Star-Spangled Banner, doing the whole thing. That was the beginning of the game that I had to watch. The All-Star game, when they were moving people in and out, sure, you watched it. But I thought that was the number one priority of the All-Star game.
Bill Lasky, again, our guest right now as we talk all things Major League Baseball. Bill, I always love the conversation. So great. I know you had a great conversation with a baseball legend over the weekend as well, and the folks can listen to that podcast and interview. Go ahead and give us all the information on where your work can be found.
Yeah, if you want to take a look at some of the interviews, it's all ALLKNBR podcast, and you just kind of go through the schedule. I had Ozzie Smith on this past Monday. I had a few other players on there you can pick up. This weekend, I'm going to be talking to Eric Burns, who used to be on MLB Network. We're going to go through everything and anything about Major League Baseball. Of course, here in San Rafael, he was pushing the umpires with the computer strike zone, and he's going to talk about that because he was influenced through that. And then I'm going to have a conversation with Candy Maldonado. Candy Maldonado, of course, played with the Giants. He was on ESPN the Spanish broadcast team for many years. So a couple of good ones coming up before the All-Star break. And then next week it'll be a little break in baseball. And then the second half starts. And, of course, you know I follow the San Francisco Giants. They've lost 6 out of 9. They're still in first place by half a game over the Dodgers. I think it's 3 or 3.5 in front of the Padres. And they got a tough second half starting off. They play St. Louis and the Dodgers. So we're going to see if Farhan is a buyer and see what he's looking at to strengthen this team. Evan Longoria might be back. Logan Webb might be back. So some of the pieces on the IL need to come back and help this club.
Bill, it's always fun. The storylines never stop coming during the baseball season. I look forward to talking with you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I hope your fans keep enjoying it because we love talking baseball. Thanks again.
Oh, absolutely. Let's break one more time. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this.